powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Hope everyone is having a wonderful Friday. It is beautiful outside in Seattle. I know you guys are listening from all over the place, so who knows if it's different where you are, but I'm so excited to head into this weekend and watch the Mariners start a new series, this one against the Colorado Rockies. A bit colder out in Denver, though. 39 degrees. It'll be a little bit warmer with first pitch, but wondering if that ball just won't carry as far. We are not starting by talking about the Mariners. In fact, we're not going to get to the Mariners until 11 when Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joins us. Instead, Bump, we're starting with the biggest story around the Seahawks. We are less than a week away from the draft, okay? The draft is hugely important, and as such, we're talking about pictures. We're talking about pictures on the wall at VMAC. That's the biggest story around the Seahawks right now. And that's just where we are. It's that time of the offseason. I don't know what to tell you guys. But, hey, I personally find this story interesting. I enjoy talking about it. And I think it brings up an interesting conversation about culture and what a new head coach should do. Less, like, hating on Mike McDonald. I like the conversation.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the text lines. Slow news day. Yup.
Yes.
Friday. You ain't got no job. You ain't nothing to do.
Yeah.
Nah.
Slow news day is one of my least favorite things. Like, if you say slow news day on a September when you got Mariners baseball, like a huge series, and then the Seahawks have a big game, if you say slow news day on April 19th, the answer is yes.
Yeah, answer is yes. So we're talking about pictures on the wall or pictures
but
that aren't on the wall.
I still like this conversation.
We're talking about Mike McDonald moving things around, rearranging the furniture, putting the all the utilities in his name now. He's responsible for all of that. Just typical things when you make a shift. And so we're talking about it, and we're getting feedback. I mean, John Schneider talked about it. The players talked about it. So therefore, we are Seattle Sports.
Right.
We'll give you our two cents.
And so here we go. If anyone doesn't know what's happening, lucky for you. But what's happening is that Mike McDonald took down a bunch of pictures from the Pete Carroll era Seahawks in one part of the facility. The Super Bowl, you know, trophy, everything is still up. It's still in other parts of the building. It's just this one area of the VMAC now has blank walls. And the point is twofold. John Schneider was talking about it right here.
Celebrating our history is like all over this building. And so we're actually going, a little more digital too. So we're going to have, you know, these things are like kind of falling apart off the walls here and stuff too. So we're going more digital. We're going to have TVs up. I was talking to Chuck about it this morning, actually. Like TVs up and just kind of like celebrating the Dave Wyman tackles, if you will, or the face masks and the whole, you know, the Kurt Warner runs and the Sean Alexanders and the Coach Holmgrens and the Coach Carrolls and the whole thing. But, you know, right when you walk around the corner from the indoor facility, I mean, we have, you know, the plates of every player that's played here and the pictures from all the guys, like more recent guys and all that. So, and really in Mike's mind, it's kind of a, hey, like, we're celebrating our history, guys, get that, but we're like, we're gonna make up our own. We're not coming in here with like certain slogans and, you know, leadership mottos and that sort of thing. We're gonna build our own as a team.
Leave it to John Schneider to join Wyman and Bob during the John Schneider show and hit us with a very rational explanation.
Yeah, it is rational. It makes sense. They're going digital, and it sounds like they're going to celebrate the whole history of the Seattle Seahawks and not just focus on an era. And I think that's the perfect way to move forward when you are making a change like this. But it also sounds like there will be spots in VMAC that are isolated just for the Legion of Boom in that era, because I think they deserve it. But the trophy's still going to be there. I believe the Super Bowl banner in the indoor facility is still going to be there. It goes, yeah. It gives us something to talk about, but it's just some redecorating. Stacey, when's the last time you've done a redecoration project in your condo?
So here's the thing. I do it all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You guys are underestimating how often I go to Target. And the answer is I just got new bedding not that long ago. So
okay.
I'm not the best example. I wish I could say once every 14 years.
it's something that we didn't think was going to happen because it wasn't on our radar, right? But as soon as you hear about it, you go, yeah, that makes sense. Make a house your home, make it your own. And it sounds like the players are receptive to it as well, because no, like you mentioned yesterday, no one on this roster was on that roster when the Legion of Boom was here. Bobby was the last one. He gone now. He's in Washington with the Commanders. So it's nice to start your own legacy or build your own legacy without forgetting what's happened. So I love the digital, man, because I could imagine walking through the hallways and seeing Kurt Warner and seeing even throw Ricky Waters in there. You know, everyone who's put on a Seahawk uniform will be remembered. And the wall that he talks about with all the signatures on it, I think that's awesome. I don't know if other teams do that, but what he's talking about is you hit the corner, there's a wall with every signature from every player who's ever suited up for the Seahawks. I think that's awesome. So in a way, they're doing a great job. They're actually enhancing the ability to kind of relive all the things that this team have done without isolating one era all throughout the facility. I think it's all good.
I'll also tell you why this story blew up. One, we're still a week away from the draft, and we're in that time in the offseason where anything is a story because you're just kind of like hanging on to things. And anything with the Seahawks is always a story because this team is beloved here in the region, and you got a brand new head coach, and people are trying to figure out, like, what's it going to look like? What's going on? We don't know a lot about this guy. Give us some details. But also, it's just the nature of news now. I think that's also been at play here. Like, you hear any kind of story, and you need some kind of polarizing reaction to it. There are a number of fans that were like, okay, and then just moved on with their day like normal, healthy people. And then there are people who turned it into a huge thing. Now, you and I yesterday were like, hey, this is a really fun conversation about culture. And, like, if I was watching a movie and a coach did this, I'd be like, oh, that's so cool. Good for him. Seattle has sometimes a painful sports history, limited championships to celebrate. And that era of Seahawks football under Pete Carroll is one that meant a lot to a lot of people, rightfully so. I don't see it as petty. I don't see it as anything. I see it as something that Seahawks fans and critics and people here aren't used to, which is a brand new head coach. You haven't seen one for nearly 15 years.
Yeah, things are changing. Change is good. I think as much as it hurt to see Pete Carroll go, as shocked as we were, I'll never forget that. I'm sitting here and I can always tell when there's breaking news because you're starting to cut me off and then your eyes get big and you're like, all right, bum, hurry up. I got something to say. And I remember seeing your face like, what the heck's going on? And I'm looking at Curtis. And I'm always the last one to know. Because Curtis finds out, he sends it to you, and I'm just sitting there waiting like, what the heck is going
on? Bob finds out about breaking news at the exact same time you guys do.
So
and
it's
Curtis
real
and I and sometimes Matt are like planning on the mics like, okay, you know, break here.
And I'm just sitting here like, all right, what's going on?
So
the best one was the Pat Chun reaction.
Yeah,
like,
man.
I knew when we were dropping that one that Bump was going to be in a world of hurt. I'm sorry,
hurt.
Bump, but it was a great reaction.
It's all good. I prefer it that way. And you'll get real raw reactions from me. I will never forget when I heard that Pete Carroll was going to be fired. And my first reaction was disbelief. And then you kind of go through the emotions. You think about how long he was here and what he did for this organization. And then the next question is always, all right, now what's next? And we didn't have to wait too long for what's next. I think they got the process going pretty quickly. But when there is change, it's not just going to be a change in personnel. There's going to be a change in culture. It's going to be a change in scheme. And apparently there's going to be a change in decor in VMAC. Mm-hmm. That all comes with it. And when you have been around the same people for 14 years, when I've been in and out that facility for 14 years, longer than that. And I remember walking by and I know where this picture is. I know where that picture is. And there's some familiarity. So I can't wait to walk through there and feel something different. You know, maybe that will get me even more excited about what's happened over there in VMAC. But good for Mike McDonald, man. Make that thing yours. And the players, you guys make that yours as well.
Well, this isn't all John Schneider talked about. He also talked about the draft, of course. And why wouldn't he? It's hugely important and it's less than a week away. He was asked why teams, and I was very interested in this answer, give first-round grades to maybe like 15 to 20 guys and gave some insight there.
You know, on average, there's probably 15 to 20, depending on the year.
Like, your grade.
True, like, first-round.
Yeah.
This guy's a first-round graded player. So when you're in the 20s, late 20s, you're really picking in the second round anyway. So why not, you know, acquire another pick is kind of the way we've looked at it. You know, when we did the deal with Jamal, that was like, okay, two first-round picks. we're picking late. If you're acquiring a Pro Bowl player like Jamal, you're going to be giving up a first-round pick the following year to go from, I think we were like 26 to go all the way up to in the top five or top seven to get a player like that. You know, you're like, okay, well, we know we can acquire that sort of talent, so let's do that. But yeah, the mentality is like, okay, you know what kind of caliber player you're getting. Now, how far back you're going to go, you know, where's your cutoff? Like, okay, now you're, because now you can get into the third round pretty quick too. You might only have, you know, 15 guys in the second round.
This is one of the most interesting things about the draft to me, because it's the thing that you can't see, which is obviously their grades on players. But there are expectations that go along with a first rounder, expectations that go along with a second rounder. And what doesn't go there automatically is the context. Yeah, we took this guy at 24 overall. We had a second round grade on him.
Yeah. So here's what John and Pete have done a great job of doing, is that after each day of the draft, they sit down with the media and kind of explain what they were thinking. In the moment, we're left to kind of speculate and think, all right, why did they do this? What were they feeling here? What do they see in that young man? And I don't think they necessarily have to be as transparent as they are. Obviously, they could be even more transparent, but they give you something. They give you a little bit of insight of why they did that. I wonder if that's going to change with Mike McDonald. If Mike McDonald's more of a keep things close to your chest type of dude and not going to give you too much. But if we're going off of history, history tells us that if they do make a move and they go back, if they do end up picking their pick at 16, if they do go Michael Penix, whatever they do, you're going to get some type of explanation about it. And so you have some insight. And I think that's important. They don't have to do that, but I think it's important so your 12s, your fans know exactly what direction you're going and why you chose to go that direction.
The Seahawks don't often pick in the teens. First of all, they don't often pick in the top 10. The last 2 years, Charles Cross at number 9 and Devin Witherspoon at number 5 was a bit of an anomaly for this team. But even then, they don't pick in the teens. John Schneider is saying having a pick there is one of the toughest spots in the draft.
You know, because I've been looking at a lot of the stuff now, too. Like, okay, you can say, all right, well, you know, the quarterbacks are like, okay, 1 through 10, it's supposed to go, and it's pretty damn close. Then once you start getting into the teens, things kind of start getting kind of wonky. And then, you know, we call them upsets. The further you get away from that, then you're kind of like, all right, cool. Like, here's our board. Here we go. Like, second, third day. Like, okay, this is meat and potatoes now. This is like, these are the dudes.
I think he's right. When you're drafting there, first of all, there's going to be a guy that you absolutely fall in love with that goes like one spot ahead of you.
Yeah.
And secondly, you're going to have some guys with question marks. You're going to have, you're going to have some temptation to trade back because if your board ends around 15, well, here you are at 16 and maybe some guys went earlier than you expected and you got a bit of a gap. It is a really interesting spot. I kind of hope Seattle sticks there. I understand they have one day to pick, and I completely understand and see the value in trading back. I also have loved the last two picks they made when they stood firm.
Yeah, and I hope they do the same. I mentioned that there's a possibility that 5 quarterbacks go in the first round. There's a possibility that 4 go in the top 10. So I think that changes. I think say something crazy happens and only 3 quarterbacks go by the time it gets to the Seahawks. Man. Ain't going to happen, but let's just throw it out there for conversation. Say only 3 go. I think it changes what they do at 16. I think now they go, all right, maybe we can move back a little bit because there are teams that want to move up and grab a quarterback or grab a certain position. If all those guys go, if we get 4 or 5 quarterbacks, then I think you got to stay right there because you're going to get a quality football player. You're not going to get a number 16 field player minus the quarterback, right? Everyone plays on the field, but we're talking about the other guys. You're not going to get the 16th best guy that plays on the field. You're going to get like the 9, 8, 10 top guy that plays on the field. So, again, the draft is like defense. You just react to whatever everyone else is doing. On defense, you sit back, the offense comes out, you line up according to their formation, and then you react. That's what the draft is. You're sitting at 16, and you're waiting to see what one does. We all know what one's going to do. 2, 3, now you get into 4, starts getting crazy. 7, let's see. Oh, Vikings moved up. All right, what's our plan if Vikings move up? Because they got a board that says, if Vikings move up, this is what we're going to do. If this team moves back, they got so many scenarios already drawn out that they're going to be prepared for what happens, but they still have to react. You sit there at 16, you wait and see what happens, and then you devise your plan. We're going nickel, we're going base defense. So man, what are we doing? You got to devise a plan.
Hear me out on this one. If only three, we both, neither of us think there's a chance this happens, but if only three quarterbacks go by the time the Seahawks are on the board at 16, you are 1,000% right in that it gives them a lot of trade opportunities and a great chance to pick up a lot of picks in the second round. However, I think they get a quarterback because I think it means J.J. McCarthy or maybe, like, I don't know. I'm assuming Drake May would be QB3, but, like, that a J.J. McCarthy is available for that. Like, I think it means they take one of those quarterbacks.
Yeah, there's no way, though, man. Denver.
There's no way it happens. But
Minnesota, Raiders.
Well, first of all, if that happens, it'll be like a Laremy Tunsil situation where people are going, well, no, everyone knew why Laremy Tunsil was sliding, but it'll be one of those situations where people are like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? Like, if J.J. McCarthy is available at 16, people are going to be wondering why J.J. McCarthy is available at 16, even though he is most certainly not the 16th best player in this draft even.
Yeah.
So that's, I can't wait to see how this thing unfolds. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Mariners look to build off their first sweep of the year against the 4-15 Colorado Rockies this weekend. What's the real headline?
The Rockies are awful, but you can never bet on a sweep.
Never. These are professionals and things happen. The Mariners are coming off a great sweep, something that you needed to see. But this is a professional ball club. That's why yesterday for, was it Hype Train? I said, no, I don't think they're going to sweep. The Rockies have gone through it. I think they lost, what, 3-4 in a row right now. Haven't been great their last 7 or 8 games. They're due for a win. So I just want to see a good performance. Clean baseball is what I want to see. If you get beat by another team and things just don't bounce your way, maybe the bats aren't as hot as they were the past couple of games, then okay, I can deal with it. I don't expect them to win every single game from here on out. That's not realistic. The Rockies are a professional ball club. We shall see. I just want it to look clean. There's a standard of play that I expect from these guys at this point of the season. Let's see if they get it done.
Things I am hoping for in this series. Number one, Mitch Haniger continues his hitting streak because it's just been like a fun thing that's been happening over the last, I think he's on 8 games right now. And it's so easy to root for him. He's a fan favorite for a reason. And you never have questions about his skill, only about his health. And if he can stay healthy, we're talking about a different Mariners team. Number two, that Julio continues his streak. In case you guys haven't noticed, that one also building on. It'll be his 4th game, I think. He had a hit in every game this series. We had been, Bump, talking about Julio's slow start and how neither of us were especially concerned, but he's the most important player on your roster.
Yeah, man. Keep the good vibes going, Julio. Again, just find ways to get on base, be good defensively, keep stealing bags. It was nice to see him kind of put everything together. We're still waiting on a bomb, no. All right, Julio, go get that.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Justin Verlander will be back in the Astros rotation tonight. He makes his season debut after being on the injured list for the first 3 weeks of the season. What's the real headline?
Can we ever just have good news as Mariners fans?
For real.
You're coming off a sweep. You're heading in to face a bad Rockies team before you head to Texas. And here come the Astros. Awful right now. 5th in the AL West, and yet getting a little bit better. Worth mentioning, so they're 6-14 right now. Since 2000, thank you, Curtis, only one team has made the playoffs after starting the season 6-14, and that was the 2002 Angels.
Mm. You know what? I don't even care, man.
It's about
us right now. All right, Houston, 6-14. You at the bottom. You at the bottom of the West. Verlander, you know, he's going to come back and get these guys some juice, maybe revitalize that whole situation over there. But right now, we are in no place to be looking anywhere. We're not looking up. We're not looking down. We're not looking right or left. Focus, focus, focus. Go to Colorado, get this series win, and we'll deal with the Astros when we got to deal with them.
The Astros are really interesting. Some more stats from Curtis here. So they're 6-14. It's because the entire starting rotation is on the IL. The entire rotation. They're 2nd in hits, 3rd in home runs, 4th in on-base percentage, 5th in slugging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Once they start getting those guys back, and this is why that quick start for the Mariners was hugely important, and it's not too late. Even though the Mariners did have a slow start and completely kicked themselves and dug themselves into a hole, it is not too late to pick that up. Again, an opportunity to sweep in a series against a bad Rockies team, even if you're playing in their house. It doesn't matter. Seize this opportunity because this team is going to get healthier with their arms, and once they do, they're probably going to look kind of unstoppable.
Yeah, the bats ain't going nowhere. Forget the Astros. Come on, Mariners. Have a good season.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, the Kraken finished up their season with a win last night over Minnesota 4-3. They will have the eighth best odds in the upcoming NHL draft lottery. What's the real headline?
I got to be honest. Playoff hockey is way more fun than hoping for a ping pong ball to bounce your way.
Playoff hockey was awesome. Got a taste of it, and then it was taken away so quickly. So what do? Now you do count on the ping pong balls. You know, my grandma had done that for about 60 years now, count on the ping pong balls, you know? Grandma love, let's send some of them good vibes this way. My grandma has won a lot of money in a lottery. Like, she doesn't win big.
In the lottery?
Like, you know, for a little
game. I thought
game.
You were about to say in, like, bingo halls.
No, but there's, she plays these games. I don't know, because I don't really get down with the lottery. But she'll win, like, $1,000 here. $500 there. It's crazy.
I've never won a single thing from a scratch ticket.
She low-key got a stash somewhere in the house that she's going to leave to her only grandson. Guaranteed.
Well, you
got
to claim them. Oh, you mean a stash of cash.
Yeah, stash of cash.
Okay,
I was
going to
say, if you don't redeem those tickets, you don't get cash.
Can you imagine
no,
you're
she's
like,
all over. She's
you're
all over.
Left a winning lottery ticket for millions, but you needed to like trade it in 180 days. Or actually, I think you have a year, right?
I don't know.
I don't even know.
I'm
but
not in the game.
Do you think, this is so unrelated to sports, you know how some states don't allow you to hide your identity if you win the lottery?
I didn't know that.
Why?
I didn't know
That's
that.
That's what I don't get. Yeah.
Because the government, Stacey.
No. Well,
the Illuminati.
I mean, actually, yes. I don't know that it's the Illuminati, but I think it's weird that there are states where if you win the lottery, if you win the Powerball and you win $1 billion, people have to know who you are.
There
I don't want
a,
that.
There was a Powerball winner in, I think, Auburn. Maybe a year or two ago, they got their ticket at the Fred Meyer that my wife and I shop at regularly. Could've I mean, we you. Didn't buy a ticket, so it's not like I could say, oh, that could have been us.
Should've.
But it's
yeah.
like,
I mean,
dang.
It could have if you just one day been exactly. like, you know what, I'm getting a ticket.
I will Sorry. Say that every time, so my best friend gets, she's not like a gambler, but she does get like a lotto ticket, a Powerball, I don't know what they are. Every time there's like a huge jackpot, she'll be like, oh, I got to go get a ticket. And every time I'm like, this is the biggest waste of money ever. And then you hear about stories like that, and you're like, I mean, shoot.
Yeah. My family, my wife's family, we're like 30 deep, and the adults will come together sometimes and be like, all right,
going
put it all
through,
in. We're going to split it evenly. You know what I mean? Let's get this.
Everyone going through the tickets, looking at all the numbers. Okay, what do you got over here? You got a big board. That's your guys' war room.
Exactly.
This is when that lotto happens. All right, we're sticking with the Seahawks here. Julio appeared on last night's edition of The Shop featuring LeBron James. We're going to tell you what he had to say during that interview coming up at 10:45. Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer is joining us at 11 to talk about an upcoming series starting tonight against the Rockies. Emerson Hancock on the mound for this one. Before we get to it, you're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Did we hear from a future Seahawk this morning? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
We might have heard from a new Seahawk this morning. Now, we'll see whether offensive lineman out of Washington, Troy Fautanu, actually falls to Seattle at 16. I think he's going to go at number 14 to the Saints, though I hope not, because I'd love to see him here. But we learned a lot about him this morning in an interview with Brock and Salk. So let's talk about him possibly getting drafted by the Seahawks.
For me, like, I'm truly excited to, like, you know, wherever, whatever opportunity is, you know, put forth in front of me, it's like, it's going to be another experience. It's going to be another adventure for me. Like, you know, living in Seattle, Pacific Northwest, the past 5 years has been awesome. And you never know, we might end up back here. But for me, it's, you know, it's just another opportunity. So wherever that happens, wherever that is, I'm truly excited.
Excited to be picked by anyone, wherever that'll be. It'll be cool to be drafted by the Seahawks. Obviously, you got to stay local. I wasn't expecting any other answer, but I do like Troy as a person. He's fun to talk to. He was in here with us, and you kind of hear that friendliness there.
Yeah, you can feel it. And obviously, it would be great for him to be in Seattle. He doesn't have to move. He knows the area. These guys know him. End of the day, he's not Eli Manning or John Elway, where you can kind of say, look, I don't want to play for this team. Let's make a move. You're an offensive lineman guy, one of the more important parts on a football team. But you just ain't got the clout like that. So, yeah, he's going to be grateful just to be drafted wherever he goes. He knows he's not going to be waiting around pretty long, much long. You know, he's going to – much long. What am I trying to say? He's not going to be waiting around for long. There
you
we go.
Buddy.
Thank you, Stacey. He's not going to be waiting around for long. He's going to sit there, and within half an hour, he will be on a football team. And then he starts to imagine himself in the jersey. You start getting your flights together. All right, when am I going to report? Talk to your agent. You start getting things lined up. But in a perfect world, it would be great to have him here because we know what's going on with this offensive line. You got your tackles. He played tackle. We're assuming he's going to be a guard. He can even play center. He is coaches here. I mean, that the transition would be so smooth for a guy like Faltano and even Michael Penix if he were to end up here. So, yeah, you would like to be in a comfortable situation. But end of the day, you are now a professional. I don't know what his NIL money was like. He probably was a professional already getting money at UW.
I can't imagine offensive linemen are getting a ton of NIL deals.
You know, but he got
all
a little sprinkle.
All due respect to the big guys.
He probably got a little sprinkle, a little something. You know, he was a starter on the best offensive line in the country. But you're right. You now are a professional. And it don't matter who you play for. You got a job to do.
I find his versatility to be the most interesting thing about him, in particular because of what he has to say about it. So I have his answer during Brock and Salk about whether or not he's open to playing guard in the NFL, which he'd have to do for the Seahawks because they have two franchise tackles. And then I have an answer that he gave during a separate interview that I find fascinating. So let's start with his answer to Brock and Salk on why he's open to playing guard.
I said, I'm just trying to compete wherever that is. And at the end of the day, I do think I'm a tackle. Like, I've heard that a lot. I've heard both. I've heard more tackle than anything. But, you know, there's, like I said before, there's guys in this NFL, in the NFL that are like, have been around for a while. So, you know, you got to be realistic sometimes and get in where you fit in. So, I'm just excited for an opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, it's crazy to think that this is now a career. This is like my job. So, you know, wherever they're paying me to play, I'm going to play and I'm going to play to my fullest, capability. So
I think he let his true feelings out there, which is he'd rather stay at tackle. So in an interview with the Draft Network's Justin Mello, he was asked, hey, what are teams telling you about where you're going to play? Where do you want to play? You know, you've profiled as much as a center, even though he hasn't been a starting center before ever. You know, what do you think about which spot? He said, quote, I think I'm a tackle. And then this part I liked, grouping me in a category with the guards because of how tall I am. I honestly feel like it was a lazy narrative that grew legs for some reason. That's lazy analysis. He ended it by saying, like, end of the day, I'm an offensive lineman. My versatility will bring value to the organization. I just want to go somewhere where I can compete. Same thing is there. But I think that low key, Troy would love to stay a tackle. That's where he feels like he excels. He plays tackle at a high level. He truly believes that. That's why I think where he lands is interesting, because if you land in Seattle, you are not staying at tackle.
No, I would push back on his lazy analysis, because trust me, Troy, I ain't lazy when it comes to watching film. And I watch film on Troy. And he can play tackle. Don't get it twisted. My man is comfortable there. He understands angles. He's good at the tackle spot. But I think on the next level, that's a compliment. He brings more value at the guard spot because of his movements. Your guards are the guys who are pulling the majority of the time. You do attach tackles to that sometimes, even pull your centers. But there's a reason why they want him at that guard spot, is because he can move. He is athletic. I think that is a compliment. I understand he's comfortable at the tackle position. And if he gets to a team that needs him there and he plays there, good for him. But you also do whatever your team needs you to do. And I think he understands that. Just put it out there. Like, look, man, I would love to be at tackle. But to say that it's a lazy narrative, it's not lazy, because guys are watching the film and seeing all the same things. So I think if he changed his perspective and saw it as a compliment just because of his athleticism and the way that he can move, he might feel differently about it. But I'm not mad at him for wanting to be or play the position that he played his whole college career.
Now, here's my question for you. Why take, and I think that I know the answer and I have my own opinion, but why take Troy Faltanu, who was a tackle? He started at guard before, but he was a tackle for Washington. He excels at tackle. He likes being a tackle. If you need interior offensive linemen, either a center or a guard, why take Faltanu as a tackle, swap him to the inside, rather than just take the best actual guard available, or take a center like Jackson Powers Johnson?
Because he is a guy, because he's versatile and he's the best offensive lineman available. The best offensive lineman. I think it's hard to take a center and say, okay, now you're going to play guard or you're going to play tackle. It's easier to move outside in than inside out when it comes to these guys. Again, another compliment. Why take him at the tackle spot and move him to guard? Because he's the best available offensive lineman, and he has the capabilities of doing both. If he comes to the Seattle Seahawks and they move him to that tackle spot, and God forbid something happens to the tackles, you know what you can do? Boom, slide him out to that tackle spot if need be. Bring somebody in at that guard spot. It's again, it's all perspective. It's all how he views this situation. And if he understands that people see him at all five positions on that offensive line because of his physical capabilities, I think he'd be more flattered than saying that it's a bit lazy. And why take him? Simple. He's the best. There are receivers who excel on the outside. I say like Roma Dunze can excel on the outside. Mm-hmm. Marvin Harrison excels on the outside. Neighbors excel on the outside. They can move inside to the slot as well. You grab receivers who are good at what they do. Your outside receiver in X or Z, good for you. But if you're able to be moved around like a Deebo Samuel, Deebo's a bit different than the guys I'm just talking about, but he's an example. If you're able to move around, that's just more you can do. More opportunities to play, more opportunities to get the football. So the fact that Troy can move around ensures that wherever he lands, he's going to be on the field with week one. So again, it's just a compliment, man. And Troy, if you're listening, that's all it is, baby. It's a compliment, man. Take that pat on the back and you run with it. But I know wherever he goes, he's going to be fine.
The Mac Jack's text line saying what my theory was also, outside of just genuinely being like, this is where I want to play and this is what I feel like I do, tackles typically get paid more than guards. So if I'm him too, I'm going, so you're, if I excel here and I become an all pro here, or, you know, like a first-team All-Pro,
mm-hmm.
I'm still going to get paid less than if I was a first-team All-Pro left tackle.
I feel it.
Which I feel
change the market then,
it.
Troy.
Yeah.
Take that challenge. Change the market. Be the best guard in the NFL.
Well, and, you know, to kind of build on what you were saying, too, like, are we confident that Abe Lucas is going to stay completely healthy? I don't think the Seahawks are. They brought in George Fant for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an opportunity there if he doesn't live up to expectation. And go Cougs, with respect. if he doesn't live up to expectation, then you have someone who you can swap over there. Or if he gets hurt, you have someone you can swap there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Versatile.
I know. I'm still on board with our decision. With our conversation yesterday of like the smart pick is Troy.
It is.
And he so obviously addresses versatility issues with your offensive line. He doesn't bring experience, but he brings a pedigree that guys on your offensive line don't have. Morris Trophy Award winner, first team all Pac-12. This is a guy that helps you immediately. And, you know, I don't think it would be his ideal landing. I think he'd love to be in Seattle, would be my guess. It's an easy move. I get that you want to be a tackle in an ideal world, but, man, if I'm John Schneider, I'm going, all due respect, I need a guard.
I need you on the field, son.
Yeah.
This is how you're going to get on the field.
The rest of that interview is on the Brock and Sock podcast. We are going to switch to the Mariners. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Mariners open up a series against the Rockies. We're going to bring on Mariners insider Shannon Dreher at 11. Before we get to it, Julio was on The Shop featuring LeBron James talking about two big-name mentors. Don't go anywhere.
Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
I'm going to take a quote from Curtis. You know Julio Rodriguez has made it when he's on a show featuring LeBron James and also guesting Ice Spice.
Yeah, he's pretty famous.
You're pretty famous. I get into a back and forth sometimes, not like a mean-spirited one, but when I say Julio's a star, and sometimes I'll get a little bit of pushback going, what has he proven to be a star? I mean, he's got a lot to prove, but when you have star power, it's obvious. And importantly, he's a celebrity whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
There are casual mm-hmm. baseball fans who know Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah. My mom does not watch baseball. She knows who Julio Rodriguez is. Now, she also listens to the show almost every day, so that might help. But, yeah, and there's something more than just – now, you got to have the play on the field, right? You got to be able to ball out. But you got to have personality. It helps if you're good looking. My man has both so far. Personality, he's got a good smile. Like being a star, you can be a Mike Trout and just be bland as heck and just hit bombs.
And he's pretty boring, but also amazing.
And just be fine. But when you have the total package like Julio has, it's going to allow you to get the opportunities like this and people to reach out for you. LeBron ain't going to reach out to Mike Trout. It's going to be a boring podcast.
Yeah.
All right. I would assume, I haven't listened to the sound yet, but I would assume that Julio showed his personality and made some more baseball fans out
there. Well, let's listen to some of that sound. Julio talked about the turning point in his rookie season.
Well, after the first month, I remember this particular game against the Rangers. I went 0-for-5 with 4 strikeouts and a line drive to Adolis Garcia, and I was like, man, I gotta do something about this. And then that's whenever, like, okay, I need to actually get rid of that, and I belong here, and I started playing like with my skill and like trusting myself. And I felt that's whenever it started for me after that first month of the year.
So saying I was going 0-for-5 with 4 strikeouts against the Rangers in April of 2022, and after that, things kind of took off. And expectations were very high for Julio, but he hadn't shown that he could be everything we know he can now. So Julio's slow start this year has been met with a lot of criticism. I don't remember it being met with a lot of criticism when he was a rookie.
Nah, he was a baby.
He was a baby.
We're like, all right, let's see what happens.
20 years old.
He ain't been paid.
Exactly. And then, or 21 years old. And meanwhile, after that, he absolutely takes off and has an amazing rookie season. And we can't stop talking about all of his potential. And it's interesting to hear him talk about his own start in hindsight. And that series, by the way, was April 19th through the 21st against the Rangers. The Mariners ended up winning that, but he had a game where he went 0-for-5 in that finale. It was a loss. It was an 8-6 loss with 4 strikeouts, and that's the game he's talking about. At this point in the season, he's hitting like 140, 150. Like he's not having like a great start. The very next game, he gets 2 hits. 2 hits in the game after that. A hit in the game after that. A hit in the game after that. He goes 4 more games before he even has an 0-for-4.
Yeah, it's baseball's a streaky sport, man. Baseball is J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith might be the streakiest basketball player I've ever seen in my life. He'll light you up for 30, and then he'll hit you for 5 and 5 turnovers the next day.
Yeah.
That is baseball right there. I mean, you put together a week where you look like an all-star, mm-hmm. and everyone loves you, and then the next week everyone's questioning your existence on this earth. That's just how it is. So expect these streaks, and that's a prime example of that. My man started 0-for-4, 0-for-5, 4 strikeouts. Yeah. It was rough, but then once you start seeing a couple pitches, once your timing is on point, once you start feeling good about yourself, things start to happen for you. So just ride the wave, man.
Well, you're registered 1 hit in his first week in the bigs, and again, had a bit of a slow start, a bit of a quiet start, even though he was having fun. He talked about people who were there for him, though, during his rookie season struggles.
I just feel like the people that I had close to me, you know, I have my agent that he knew me since I was 14, but before I was somebody to kind of like that. I have my family that was right there, and like, obviously, the work that I put in, you know. I feel like I always thought that I worked really well, like I worked a lot to kind of get to the opportunity, and I didn't want it to let it go to waste. And I feel like there are a lot of people that trust me, and I just feel like I didn't want to let them down. And that's why I had to keep my head up, because there's no turning point for me. I'm not going to go to the minors, and I just got to make it work right now. And that was kind of my mentality going into it.
Yeah, when you have, I like that I'm not going to the minors, yeah, because you're talented. Right? Some guys, you start to struggle a little bit. They're waiting on that phone call, that tap in the shoulder to say, hey, we're sending you to Tacoma. He knew there is no other option here. I have to try to make this work. So what do? I change things up. So I'm curious to know if he changed anything up to start the season, because he didn't start. He still hasn't played the way that we expect him to play consistently. But what do you do in moments like this? What have you learned over the past couple of seasons to where you can tap back into something? When I'm struggling, this is what I'm doing, or this is what I do to get myself going again, getting more sleep, talking to someone else. Who knows what's going on? What I like about this is that I know he has a process now. Mm-hmm. I know that when things are tough, he has a process. When things are going well, he has a process. This is what becoming a veteran does to you. You don't panic. I would imagine his rookie season, when he did have that slow start, there was a bit of a panic there, like, oh my God, I'm in the show, I'm in the big leagues, and I'm not producing. So because he's had those failures, he can tap back into something and say, this is what I did the last time I struggled a bit. I'm not going to panic. Everyone else is going to panic, but I'll be fine.
The 206 said, by the way, and J.R. Smith might lose you a championship. When you said J.R. Smith is streaky, I mean, you already know the moment that I flash back to, which was LeBron just so furious, frantically pointing. What are you doing? Let's go to our last one here. Julio talks about his big contract signing with the M's and also having Ichiro and Griffey around as mentors.
It was definitely like a crazy opportunity to be out there, you know, like coming from like a kid to the Dominican Republic. You obviously follow Ken Griffey Jr., guys like Ichiro Suzuki, like all those big names, and just being able to be on the same team and play in the same position, I seem obviously like raise a lot of comparisons and all that. But I'm just grateful to have him in my corner that I can just go, hey, like, what do you do when you were going through this? Like, what was your approach? Mm-hmm. Like, all those things. I feel like I take advantage of it because I feel like everybody has their own time to kind of keep building on that house. And I feel like it's really cool to have him, like, same guy, same position, kind of going through a lot of similar things and be able to, like, have him to help me out, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
It was really cool to have him out there.
Yeah, I would go ahead and say it's a pretty amazing mentor to have.
Oh, come on now. What? You kidding me? you got him on your speed dial. Is speed dial even a thing anymore?
No. Now it's just favorites.
Yeah, it's favorites.
Favorites?
Yeah.
Okay. I just holler at Siri.
I honestly had to think about what speed dial was for a minute. Now, speed dial was where it would dial it faster, or was it like a shortcut on your phone?
Speed dial was, and then you just like push the
number.
You
would program numbers for certain people, and you would just press the number.
And we're talking house phone. Now, I am old enough to have used speed dial. I'm just blanking and misremembering how it was used.
Yeah, I think it was
I remember.
Cell phones.
You put your friend as number one. You put your mom as number two. Your dad as number three.
Whoa, you put your friend at number one? Mom ain't number one?
Wow, sure.
I'm just using examples.
These feel like not random examples.
I mean, who do you lean on when things are going well and when you're struggling? I think everyone in the attached to the show right now have people that they lean on when things are going good and bad. So he just has a more prestigious list of people he leans on when things are going bad.
And then I called my friend Ken. It's nice because he's played the same position as me.
I call him Kenny.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to keep with our Julio conversation, but let's ask an expert about how he's doing and the rest of this team as they get ready to take on the Rockies. Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joins us next.